perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A fight kick is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
And anywhere that you can see a spooky grin. Listening to the skin, you know, we're behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And beating Carlton is always a good thing.
It is, Nick. And Nick, before we get into our usual discussion about pressure racks and score involvements and, you know, all the usual smarky, smart fan discussion we have on the show, I just want to take a step back and not talk about statistics for a moment and just say how lucky we are to be able to support a team that has Dustin Martin on it, because he makes watching football so much more fun.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing, although in a different way on Friday night. I mean, obviously the football was just stunning. But I'm always fascinated by his interaction with the other players. Like, I think they really like him. I'm not sure how much he has in common with some of them, but things like that, he's good friends with Trent Cochin. Like, Trent, you know, they couldn't have more different backgrounds. I'm constantly fascinated by Dusty.
The way he stopped, and when he completely didn't have to, and waited for Daniel Butler to catch up so he could hand pass to Daniel Butler so he could kick his
nice
first goal.
Nice moment.
It was incredible. My favorite moment of his play, like the Torpy's got a lot of coverage, which went for 78
fair enough,
according to Fox Footy. But my favorite moment was when he stiff armed. Who wasn't? It was a good Carlton player who's a good tackler.
Oh, it was 15.
Yeah, but he's a good player, good tackler. When he was dead to right, he stiff armed him, and then. My second favourite thing was, you might not have seen, but Brandon Ellis went screaming past, calling for the hand pass, going into a dead pocket on his wrong foot. So, classic Brandon Ellis play, and Dusty straight burnt him, and did the much smarter hand pass, which was a longer and harder to see hand pass to Rioli, who was inside, who kicked the goal. And by the way, have you noticed Rioli's kicking for goal was on a small sample size, much better thus far. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, God, he's amazing to watch.
Oh, it just, there's nothing quite like it that I, you know, there are other players who've got a similar presence, but just as a sheer match winner, he's amazing. Sam Doherty.
Doherty, thank you.
Was the one.
Yeah. So it was just we made a tweet about the Carlton banner, and it was a very, very popular tweet. Might have been our second most popular ever. But yeah, it was just a bit of fun. I don't mind that Carlton had done it. You know, it's just a joke about his haircut. But Nick, it is something that I don't think we've discussed on the show before. Have you noticed how that, despite being a very talented attacking player, that no one ever tries to rough up Dusty in games?
Well, I always, you know, it's hard to extrapolate from our own, you know, long but deeply mediocre football careers to AFL level players. But yeah, I'd be scared of Dusty.
Yeah, I think
it just really has that I don't give it look in his eye.
Yeah, I think also people might know a few other things about Dusty. I feel it's a small world.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I don't, like, have you just ever noticed that, you know, people don't remonstrate with that Dusty more than is strictly necessary to do their jobs?
No, that's true. That whole my dad can beat up your dad thing, like,
I think we can leave it there.
Yeah.
But it was good fun. It was, you know, already, if for nothing else, if this season turns out to be a complete disaster, in the old days when you used to buy videos and name the game, this is a game you could buy and keep purely for the Dustin Martin performance, because it was absolutely magnificent.
Look, it was pretty solid gold. It was the most points we've scored in a match since towards the end of 2015, the most tackles for a similar period. Sadly, the AFL doesn't have pressure racks available, but I'm pretty certain that was well above any single game we've had in recent memory.
So actually, there was one stat I pulled from a Fox Sports article that we had 34 forward half turnovers, which was the most since 2012.
Hmm. Wow.
And the tackles you mentioned before, it was 10 more. And we only had 86. And think about that. It was a dry day, you know, there was nothing particularly, you know, generally your high tackle numbers are on a, you know, wet, crappy day when you're in solid contested footy. We had 10 more. We had 86, which was 10 more than our highest last year. Like, you can always have a one game outlier, but as an outlier on a dry day, that was quite extraordinary.
Hmm. Nick Vostone had 12 tackles, which is, no one on the Richmond list has ever had more tackles than that.
Yeah, and there were multiple players, and players have been on our list. Jack had his career high for tackles, and there were plenty of other guys who were sort of, I sort of went through a few others about were they on their career high tackles and all very close to, and, almost all, a lot of guys either had the highest tackles or like a one or two off, and the game where they had the highest tackles were sort of a famously wet day at Port Adelaide or something like that, you know, you remember as being, as I said, a high tackle game. Like
a slog.
Yeah. I wouldn't say just your 2015 Richmond. This was not your, and again, it could be an outlier, but it was not your traditional Damien Hardwick Richmond that we've become used to.
No, the note of caution to it is that we also had, that is one aspect to it. I'm a bit jealous of their young key position players.
Absolutely.
I'm both ends of the ground. They were pretty good. Their lack of any sort of young midfielder other than Cripps was encouraging. We kicked that many points despite Jack having an average day and Griffiths getting beaten badly by Marchbank. That was pretty encouraging. Sammy Lloyd, who we'll talk about some more later, but he was a bit disappointing either. So that's our three of our four leading goal kickers from last year not doing much. Yep. And we kicked a ton.
Well, that's a perfect segue into the Mosquito, Philippe. But before we do, I just wanted to mention that Dustin Martin had 817 yards gained in his kicking. I've never seen a Richmond player get that high before.
No.
But...
No, Reece Conker made a surprise appearance in top 5 metres gained as well.
Yeah, he did. I mean, because considering, you know, he's often negative. I jest, of course, but...
The point I wanted to make before, the pressure in the preseason was good for almost the whole time, except for that first half against Collingwood, where, for whatever reason, it went away. So hopefully it comes back again this week.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about them more later, but I think that's very much like this is really exciting football. The question is, you know, will it be sustained? What's it like against, what is probably a good mid-table team, which is what Collingwood are based on 1 week's worth of form. But you hinted at it, Nick. I think that the other story other than Dusty is, the Mosquito Fleet forward line, which was really exciting to watch. And all three of them played. We talked about before the game that, I don't think you were concerned, but you just raised the issue that we had three guys who were young and quick, but traditionally had low disposal counts, and how was that going to work in the forward line? And they were short. None of them are, known for their contested marking. And all three of them...
Other than when Rioli's standing on people's heads for a specky.
Yeah, okay, let's not jump ahead, but all three of them were great, weren't they?
Oh, just fantastic. They were all on right from the start as well. I thought Castagna was, I actually thought he was a bit unlucky not to have four goals, never mind two. He was getting good shots for goal. Butler got the freebie from Dusty, but he was working really hard.
Got coach's votes.
Got coach's votes. Rioli had the least ball of the three of them, but again, he just looked really good everything he does. And it was a fantastic. I've been trying to remember that real mosquito fleet. Like, we had Nation Daffy as our two leading goal kickers in 1995, but no, that both of them were skillful, and in Daffy's case, you know, often a big accumulator of the ball, but just that sheer speed. You've got to go back to days of having KB and Barry Rawlings and the Flea buzzing around the feet of the big guys to have that sort of mosquito fleet, I think.
Yeah, I think there is those players. The three of them playing together is a product of the modern game. That I don't think guys who are genuinely as quick as them. I think, you know, Castagna in an older era might have struggled for various reasons we don't need to get into. But
oh my God! Did you see his attempt at left foot kick?
But I mean, the point is, it's working out. And the thing, I hate this cliche. I hate talking about playing like the team that won the premiership last year. But we are playing a bit like Bulldogs football. And you know, for 1 week it worked fantastically. And Nick, I wanted to come to Rioli. Like, obviously, Castagna statistically was great. Had 10 score involvements. But Butler 2. They both kicked 2 goals. Butler had 9 score involvements. They both had plenty of pressure acts. But in some ways, you can also make a case that Rioli on the tape, live I didn't think this, but on the tape, Rioli was the best of the three. And you know, if you look back at the first half, we kicked 3 goals just from his general pressure, because he does something. And you know, I apologize for going back to one of my favorite whipping boys. Rioli scares people when he's behind them. He gets in their heads because he's so quick. Steve Morris never did, because he's moderately paced, not slow, but he's moderately paced. And you know, if you step sideways, he's going to charge off on his tracks. Except for,
I think, like,
you got a Chris Yaron.
I think Morris, although Rioli tested out well for endurance as well. Morris was fairly quick, you know, if you wanted him to run 100 metres, but he didn't have that really explosive,
exactly,
steps that, Rioli has. And Castagna's quick. Castagna and Butler are all quick.
All three of them are quick and agile. And Rioli especially because he's got the biggest reputation. He scares people when he's behind them, because they don't want to be caught by him. And so I counted 3 goals that came from just Rioli's presence and his chasing. And not only that, that contested mark he took late in the second, which was, you know, is on the goal of the, this is hardly, you know, revelatory. It's on the goal of the week, voting. But that time he was 2-1, there was no one else around, had the ball been turned over, which by all rights it should have been, it was a broken open play. Carlton could have easily have rebounded and kicked the goal. Rioli took the mark. Delivered well. We kicked the goal going the other way. Like, that's arguably a 12-point turnaround. Like, the kid is effing special.
I know. Look, Cyril's a pretty impossible benchmark. And look, Cyril had a better first year than Daniel did. But yeah, I've got very little doubt of him having a long career in the AFL, and he's got the chance to be a very good player. Yeah, it's and his name Rioli. Even the name brings me joy.
Yeah, he's incredible. And you know, we sort of knew that, but yeah, the Castagna and Butler have just been utter revelations, and let's hope they can keep it up.
Do you want to talk about the other newbies in the team while we're at it?
Well, I mean, the guy that stood out to me, and he got second best on ground from both coaches, I really like Prestia's game.
Very much so. And the encouraging thing about his pre-season was that he he won a fair bit of ball in not that much game time, but I wasn't certain about how that would translate over a longer stint on the field. But yeah, not to worry about that. He was covering the MCG just fine.
So he didn't sort of, like, his statistical production was fine, but it was not dominant. But the thing that I really liked is he was just silk with the ball. Like, every time, like, it was just by the end of the game, my instinctive reaction when he had it was, you know, it was the same reaction you used to have when Lids had it. You know, you knew something was going to happen for your team. And that first goal,
he's not the best on his opposite foot.
Yeah, no, that people point that. And he's short, of course. He's one-sided, but he's just clever with the ball and he's thoughtful and he's not rushed. And that first goal he kicked, he set the ball up. That play up from half back, and the play wasn't particularly slow, and he ran hard despite, you know, the question was going to be how he was going to be after the preseason. He ran three quarters of the length of the ground, burnt off his man to get to Crum and kick the goal. Like, I was very impressed and thought, wow, there's plenty more to come there.
And he's a nice stylistic, counterpoint to Lids and, Cochin as well. I was a bit surprised they didn't play Miles, but yeah, no, they were clearly feeling pretty confident.
Dimmer can't be happy unless he's making supporters unhappy with his 22nd selection. I mean, what is Hunt there other than to torment us? Because we don't have enough halfback flanks in the team. But let's start on the positive. What did you think of Caddy's game?
Well, I said in the show last week that I thought he might actually play some of the Ty Vickery role, and he actually did at moments like that when he was for the Dusty Torp. He's isolated one out against one of Carlton's tall forwards, and I liked his game. I didn't love his game. I suspect that might be a bit the Josh Caddy mould. Like, he's never really taken a leap to be a really high level performer, but he's a good player and he knows what he's doing and he wins his own ball and he kicks goals. So yeah, I'm perfectly happy to have him in the team.
Yeah, he was flying for everything early. So he actually cost us a goal by flying, backing back into a pack semi-bravely, but then dropping the mark, and then the Carlton crumbed the ball, probably his direct man crumbed the ball and kicked the goal. But, you know, he'll work his way into it. There is an inherent variability in playing that sort of, forward mid role. But yeah, he was okay.
Yeah. And he knows how to kick goals, which is hard to teach.
He kicks that snapshot for goal he had in the first. We'd be talking about his game a bit differently.
Well, speaking of snapshots for goal, I deeply enjoyed Toby Nankervis's.
Yes. Funny sort of game. Both the Champion R and the AFL ratings loved his game. And he hit 50%. He tied, despite losing the hit-outs reasonably handily to Cruz. He tied in effect, hit-outs to advantage because he was, tapping very well.
That was part of what he was good at when he was in Sydney, was that a high proportion of hit-outs to advantage.
And two nice goals. His snap goal in the first was against, Casbolt, which it wasn't against Cruz. I was worried about Cruz. I like Nank's game. I was worried about Cruz for a lot of the game. In fairness, Cruz is a number one draft pick who looks like he's got his body right. So it's not, you know, maybe Cruz may be a top five ruckman in the AFL this year. My gut watching it, I know statistically Nankervis was quite sound. In my gut, I was really worried about Cruz for the whole game, but you know, he was very solid.
Yeah, look, they both kicked two goals. It was nice. There was a nice mark for the second goal as well.
That was a really tough mark. That's a very good point.
Yeah, and he's consistently pulled a couple of contested marks a game, which which I'm very happy with. Yeah, he does. He will get jumped on a bit. It'll be interesting to see how he goes against Grundy this weekend. But yeah, very, very solid debut.
Well, we've seen it. Well, we didn't talk about that much, but you know, you think about this. We didn't talk about the practice game, but he basically battled a draw with Grundy. I think that's not a reasonable saying the practice game. Grundy's a first round draft pick. He's a third round pick. Cruz is a number one pick. If he keeps having fighting draws with people that cost much more in assets than he did, you know, you're ahead.
I liked, speaking of Levi Casbolt, which I don't like too often if I'm not disparaging his kicking, but
I didn't realise how bad he was. Like, if you look on the Herald Sun, they had this nice little season preview about rating players relative to other positions at other players at his position at his age, and Levi Casbolt is terrible in that measure. We digress.
I thought Dave Asprey stitched him up, but I thought Alex Rance was a bit off.
So I heard a pro Richmond journalist say that he's not over his hamstring tendonitis. We'll see, but I agree. Like, he's always played well against Collingwood, so let's see how he goes next week.
Yeah, and then it's like Darcy Moore. You know, he's going to be a very good player, but yeah, he's still young. So you know, he's not a great player at this stage. Who else?
So I wanted to ask you what did you think about Blossy? Obviously, he went forward and then moved back, but how did you think of his first half in the forward line?
I liked the pressure, and I liked the goal. Yeah, it was still. I found him quite reassuring in the back line in the last quarter. When things got a bit sweaty, I'm uncertain.
Let me do a bit of maths for you. Well, not I need to do maths for you, but just the. So let's assume that Asprey, Rance, and Grimes take three of the backline spots, which is a pretty safe assumption. They're basically automatic selections. Yep. Basically, all three of them play more than 90% of game time in most games. Having said that, I just read that Grimes played 81. But, you know, they're your three tall rocks. On the weekend, we started with six in the back line. We didn't start playing a loose till we were well in front. So that leaves you three spots, three sort of flanker small spots on your team. We, on the weekend, played Hunt, Hooley, McIntosh, Conker, Ellis, and Vossi. So you've got all six of those guys arguably half bank flanks or back pockets, or played their best football there. And Vossi, for his solidness in the back line, has sort of plateaued back there. And although he got three possessions in the first half, I suspect he probably got 8 or 9 of his 12 tackles in the first half. And, you know, for God's sake, though, I'm sorry to harp on it, but, like, they played, Morris got, like, 7 or 8 games consecutively in the forward line before they gave up on the experiment the first year they tried it. I would like to see Vossi get another few weeks, see what happens.
Yeah, look, I liked having the option to switch him into defence, but, yeah, I'd prefer to not to see it again for a while unless... You know, unless again we're in a similar situation of protecting a 5 or 6 goal lead. I thought Hawley was a bit maybe showing a bit of a lack of full preseason.
He did. Yeah, one thing I did notice about him, but you know that chase he did on Pickett? The commentators talked it up like, oh, poor Hawley, you know, he's a bit old, yada, yada, yada. He didn't lose a step.
No, he didn't lose a step. And
that was actually impressive to me.
Pickett's had a bit of injuries, but he tested out really fast when he was coming in the draft a couple of years ago. Yeah, no shame there. And look, we were remiss last week, actually, not to mention his 150th. I mean, 124 of them in the yellow and black. But yeah, as ever, I have a soft spot.
I think regular listeners to this podcast know that we're... where were Hawley fans. We're also a Greek fans who was very solid, 27 possessions, took one nice mark back and back in traffic.
Do you think he enjoys beating Carlton? I think he's perhaps the one Richmond player who enjoys beating Carlton as much as we do.
Yeah. Do you think, I wonder, it's so, you can never get a player to answer this honestly, because of course they're going to say the fans are great, but I do wonder what Prestia feels like walking off the field. You know, it's been documented. He's never played in front of more than 50,000 before. And the biggest crowd he played against was against Adelaide, which obviously weren't supporting him. Like what it's like to walk off.
It was more than three times bigger than any crowd he's ever. It wasn't a home game, although, you know, we had good numbers there. Like, yeah, it must have felt like another. You know, Metricon Stadium's a nice stadium, but it's a glorified country stadium in some ways, in its size. The MCG is another universe.
Yeah. When Dusty kicked one of his long goals, it was going to the punt road end. It was a high shot from the AFL members' wing from a 50. The crowd was really loud. I suspect he's never heard a roar like that before.
Yeah, good times. Finishing off the halfback flankers, I think Richo said at one stage, Camden McIntosh not at his best in the last line of defence, and I think that was the case.
Yeah, and I don't like Hooley overhead. I actually prefer speaking I prefer Hooley. Conker. I don't like Conker overhead. I prefer Hooley overhead than Conker. Yeah, I know. I'm in Camp Camden though. I'm on McIntosh.
Yeah, I like the size and the athleticism, and I like his ability to get up and back as well. But yeah, you just don't. Let's just make sure he swaps with Dylan Grimes every time somebody's trying to isolate him one out in the goal square.
Him, Butler, and Castagna have a lovely habit of, because they know they're fast and they're usually quicker than the direct opponent, is that they run straight at the goals when they get the football. And it sounds obvious, but it is an underrated ability.
Now, do you want a glass? There's a glass half full and there's a glass half empty side to what I want to say next. But
is this about Ben Graffis not being Jesse White?
Well, it's that we've had a very comfortable win, but we've had, you know, the polite way of putting it is that there were a number of players in the team with substantial room for improvement. Hunt we've mentioned, Griffiths beaten all night, Lloyd. I wouldn't even say he broke even, probably.
Luke could have had two. He was two chances. He was unlucky. He took a mark which didn't get paid, and there was another point where he should have snapped, and he probably would have hit it. But if he had two goals, he probably would have.
That would have broken even. He had a couple of screaming turnovers, which is unusual for him. But he did.
That was bad luck.
Look, he does look a little bit slow compared to the other forwards. He does convert his
opportunities. Everyone does.
But if you're looking at those, you know, it's only, you would normally expect a team to win that well to go in close to unchanged. But look, I don't. There's a lack of a real alternative to Griffiths. But apparently, Jaden Short played well in the AFL, and Ben Lennon's been kicking goals. I mean, some of them, opportunistic is a kind word, but you can actually see that if you're playing that three small, tall, small forwards, then we do look a bit short. And sometimes it's, you know, we need somebody else who can provide a marking target up forward. So I think there's a lot of room to look at those two coming in.
Yeah, I think Ben Lennon's lack of pace maybe becomes less of an issue when you've got the other three burners going. And obviously the other three burners played so well, they stay in, and who can play with them? I agree we need a marking target. Lennon's plays taller than he is. Those three goals they showed on the Richmond website were deeply unimpressive, and sort of Ben Lennon specials. But yeah, there's a case to be made for a creative good marking player, you know, to play the Ty Vickery role. So yeah, I was actually saying the same thing. Like I'm open-minded towards Ben Lennon, in the team. I'd be also open-minded to Lloyd getting another game, but I can see Lloyd and Lennon being quite direct substitutes. And maybe, you know, you'd have to look really closely beyond the ability I'd be willing to do so of who Collingwood's backs are and how they're going to man up on the three quick guys, and then how they handle the next guy. But I can see the case for Lennon. I was very much thinking the same thing. If we're going to just continue the forward, it makes very good sense to me to drop Hunt for Miles, because I thought we're a bit shallow potentially in the midfield, and Miles can play.
The one thing in Hunt's favour is that he's pretty quick, and can play on the small forwards. And although Collingwood's got a few injuries in their small forwards, which is good, but despite not having seen Jaden Short in the pre-season, I'd more than happy to give him a game. And he's a decent kick, which the back line does have some scruffy kicks in it. So, yeah, I can see that.
Let's be ruthless. We are a team that finished with a percentage below 80 last year, and we played six guys below 50 games in the team. Like, that is the age profile of a better team.
It's a mid-table profile. Carlton.
We need more young guys.
Carlton's selected team was older than ours. They had someone withdraw, which nudged it the other way. But yeah, funny demographic.
They had 10 to 11. I think they had 11 guys with under 50 games or 10. I mean, I was actually I was contemplating the Carlton rebuild about if I was a fan of theirs, would I want them to go even younger?
I mentioned the VFL, and there's frankly not much else to say because we got a largely descriptive match report and a series of photos without captions, but in the absence of any genuine analysis from the website, it's quite hard to take anything else away from what was a decent win against the Northern Blues.
Yeah, I find it slightly disappointing. I think it lets down the good work of the other people on social media. You know, I mean, it's a well-written article and it's nice pictures and good video package, but, you know, I think it is, you know, we've moved past the era of just having that without having crunchy data. Like, you know, when the biggest circulation daily, which is designed, I think, for a year 8 reading level or whatever the Herald Sun's pitched, that has quite detailed and excellent statistics. You know, it's just become mainstream these days.
Anyway. I know. And look, there is a website that provides it, but only for the VFL
for the regular
season.
Season games, yeah.
For the VFL season proper, which is annoying. But yeah, that's a couple of good wins for the VFL team, and maybe that's a product of a comparatively short injury list. But Collingwood, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, the odds suggest a 50-50 game. I haven't checked them lately, but I think that's about...
Like this morning, I think it was about 3.5 points to
the Pies?
To Collingwood.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. I can see why, and sort of on a one-game relative form, a narrow loss to the Bulldogs where you dominated the game but didn't convert was maybe better than beating a team that is probably going to come second last. But, yeah, to me it's a 50-50 game, and it's really hard for me to predict because I just don't know what this Richmond team is like relative to last year's Richmond team. And, you know, I don't have a good feel about the form. How do you feel?
Well, it's hard for the other side as well, because it is a Collingwood team that's been in transition for a while, and they had a funny off season where getting some older guys in Daniel Wells and Chris Mayne that would make you think they're going, you know, they're having a crack at a premiership now, when you'd look at them and think, oh, maybe they're probably more a couple of years away, but they've got, you know, they've recruited a lot of guys from other clubs, but they've still got, it's a pretty anonymous defence with guys like Tom Phillips, Josh Smith, Henry Shade. These are far from household names, and the you know the whole winning a lot of ball but not winning the game. I think the champion data had Collingwood having the best midfield in the league, so they, you know, perhaps that is their vulnerability, and that one that's against a Bulldogs team playing the million dollar man Tom Boyd in the ruck, which. It's a grotesque waste of resources, but I think that's Collingwood are going to have games where they dominate midfield and lose some because you know they've got Ben Reid at centre half back, who's a very good player when he's fit. Darcy Moore at the other end, very promising. Fasolo is annoyingly good when he plays against us, thankfully. Elliott's out injured, but they're still...
Aguilar Grimes was playing well against him last time before he did his...
Until he got injured, I know. Pendlebury and Treloar versus... and supported by Adams and Crisp versus...
Interesting point that was raised by a friend of the podcast we won't mention, but Treloar, basically the opportunity cost of Treloar is Prestia and Rioli, and he's so good he's almost worth it, but
and I can probably in aggregate football terms that sort of Rioli does provide me quite a lot of joy.
Yeah. I mean
an elite midfielder
The Prestia Treloar, you basically know what they are. We'll wait and see what Rioli is.
Yeah. So they're a good team. They're, not to be taken lightly at all. It is, hopefully we don't get a repeat of that first half from Maui, but, if we play as we did on Friday, we're going to be up to our eyeballs in this one.
Yeah, and it's going to be a big game. It's going to be in front of a big crowd. It's the Thursday before school holidays. Like it is, we're in an occasion, which is nice because, you know, as has been discussed, our season was over pretty early last year. This is exciting. This is good football.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.